Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evidence Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this April the 29th on the West Coast, now April the 30th on the East Coast, and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome those who may be listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world and on BlogTalkRadio.com. I've got a great show for you tonight. And I might as well go right into bringing on tonight's guest. It's been quite a while since he's been on the show. I used to be a regular guest on his show a few years back before I started my own show on Republic Broadcasting Network. And he currently hosts that show on Oracle Broadcasting Network. It's called The American Awakening. And he is also the owner of a website by the same name, and he's my good friend, Michael Herzog. Michael, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Don. I appreciate that. And before we get started on this, I want to mention, you know, I'm as you know, I'm on business. Of course, I live in Phoenix, Arizona, but I'm on business here in Round Rock, Texas. And you've become quite a star. I was driving down the highway on Highway 35 here just yesterday, listening to RBN. You know, I used to be a host there. Of course, you were on Tuesdays with me. And lo and behold, 96.3 FM, I'm listening about, I don't know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and the caller calls into the show. I don't even know what the name of the show was, and he's talking about Don Nikoloff. And I had to start laughing. I'm saying, you know, I know that guy. So you've become quite a celebrity throughout the country, Don. I want to give you accolades for that.
Well, people are reading the research. I guess people are waking up, which is good. You know, we want to show the truth as best we can, and it makes some people uncomfortable, but you know, it is what it is. And when you can document these things, it really forces people to think outside the box. And I've heard my name mentioned a couple of times. It gets mentioned on this show once in a while, even
on your own show, very rarely, but once in a while.
Well,
you know, and speaking of that, Don, I tell you, there is a wave. I see it, I hear it on the airwaves. I feel it. There's a sense of longing in this country, and it seems that people are finally starting to open their eyes and say, "Wait a minute, you know, something isn't right here." And you know, it's interesting that I start to see snippets here and there. You know, for example, we've always seen this thing with immigration and how the government is purportedly, you know, doing something about illegal immigration, the federal government. But really, it's only a dog and pony show. They never do anything. I remember, you know, a few years back, actually driving down to the border and interviewing Glenn Spencer, the American Border Patrol. And this is shortly before George Bush had driven down there and done a photo op where he was on the border with a bunch of Border Patrol. But they never did anything. You know, and they talked about building a fence and funding the fence and so forth. And finally here, a few years later, the states are starting to wake up. There was a law that was signed into legislation in the state of Arizona by Jan Brewer, the governor there, that now they are checking and they are looking for illegal immigrants. Well, there's a big to-do going on with the federal government. Everybody's up in arms about this Governor Jan Brewer signing this bill, you know. And what the state of Arizona does, and I commend her for doing that, because finally the state is standing up and saying, hey, wait a minute, that's enough of this. We do not want to do the federal government's job, but we have to do it because they won't do it. And now they're putting pressure on Governor Rick Perry in the state of Texas to do the same thing. And, of course, he's doing a song and dance. He doesn't want to answer the question of whether he's going to follow suit or not. But you know, Don, if all of the border states were to do that, okay. And by the way, folks, I want to say, and I know, Don, you agree, that I don't advocate, you know, people coming over to this country and becoming citizens. That's not what I'm talking about. I am talking about illegals coming over here, okay, and going about it the wrong way and living here and drawing off of Social Security and opening bank accounts and so forth. I'm not talking about legals. I'm not talking about people come over here legally and go through the process. I'm talking about the illegals. If all of those states followed suits, we wouldn't have a problem, Don, not to mention the fact that the illegals would continue to move to where there's no place to go. If all the states followed suits, they would ultimately have to go back to where they came from and do it the right way. Do you not agree?
Absolutely. In fact, they're being encouraged to come over the borders. They're the Border Patrol and the military, when there is a skirmish of some kind, or I should say skirmish, but maybe it is a skirmish after all. they're basically backslapping each other, meaning the Mexican military and the U.S. military or the Border Patrol. You know, the Border Patrol's hands are tied, basically. These intrusions into the country by military forces, foreign military forces, should not be happening. Does it take a rocket scientist to figure that out? And the people are not getting any remedy, because when they call the Border Patrol, and they're told, hands off, you know, stay out of it. This has been going on quite a bit. Now, you live in a town, or in a county, I should say, where Sheriff Joseph Arpaio has made quite a name for himself. He last night said he has 38,000 illegal aliens in jail right now. And these are undocumented people who have snuck over the border. And he says a lot of them are criminals. They're drug dealers, rapists, maybe even murderers. And many of these people have gone into your part of the country from California. And he had it out with a California congressman saying, we're doing you a favor. Why don't you start doing your job? You know, we're doing this for you. And he has a point. There's one thing about, how this country was, I almost said company. I guess maybe that's because that's what it really is.
Well, it depends on who you talk to. You know, there's many people out there that say the United States is a corporation, which makes it a company, but go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, so, but the fact that, we were taught that this country was built on the opportunity to pursue the American dream, and that these people that came, and, you know, my ancestors came from Europe, so I'm not complaining about people doing it legally. My ancestors came here legally, and they had to produce documentation as to who they were. Now, at the same time that was occurring, they were sending tens of thousands of spies here every year. This was not something that just happened in a one-shot deal in 1947. This has been going on for 150 to 200 years. This has been happening. And, you know, you could say ever since our Revolutionary War, that was the plan. And the secret societies have written about that and outright declared that to our faces, that that's what they intended to do and that's what they've done. Now, that's a different issue from immigrating into the country for a better life or as a refugee from a world war. We have been basically sabotaged from within. This is ingrained in the political system, not just in Washington, D.C. They created their agents and they put them in positions of power across the country. And the long-term goal that they kept very secret and very quiet in a number of ways was to establish a coup from within, and that was done many times. I've been writing about that recently. And despite what some people may think, the documentation proves it, that it went on. And it's still going on today. We have exactly the same problem. So it doesn't surprise me, you know, that someone is finally seeing the picture. I haven't read. Have you read actually the legislation that your governor passed there in Arizona?
No, I haven't. Excuse me. I haven't had time to actually sit down and read the legislation. However, I do know that the propaganda that's being put out by the nation of Mexico, they're putting out warnings about what they're calling migrants traveling to Arizona, and it's basically an obfuscation because we're not talking about migrants here; we're talking about illegals. But the Mexican government doesn't want to call them illegals, okay? But they are putting out warnings to their people about them coming over. So evidently, and what's going to happen now? I would assume is that all the people are going to go, oh, wait a minute, the coyotes are going to have to make another trail from Arizona over into New Mexico or Texas, and it's going to cause an influx of more illegals coming into those territories, which is going to put more pressure on the governors of those respective states to, either poop or get off the pot, if you will. But I want to go back for just a moment, Don, if you will. We were on the topic, you had mentioned Joe Arpaio. And I have to tell you, I don't agree with everything the guy does. I mean, the thing about the pink underwear in the tents, I got a problem with that one, but you never know. One day I might wind up there. But aside from that, this guy stepped up to the plate a couple years ago, and he said, "Hey, you know what? I'm going to start arresting these people. This is a burden on us. These people are coming over here. They are robbing. They are stealing. They are raping. They are killing. They are driving down the road without car insurance. My own daughter had an occasion to be sideswiped by illegal, and the police department would do nothing about it because their hands are tied. But the point I wanted to make about Joe Arpaio is he stepped up to the plate and tried to do something about this, and then the federal government starts slapping an investigation on him for racial profiling. Well, all he was doing was stepping up to the plate before Jan Brewer did and say, hey, wait a minute. I'm going to do the job that the federal government is supposed to do and isn't doing. So although I don't agree with everything Joe Arpaio does, I do agree with that particular position that he holds. So I commend him for that.
Well, he has the authority to do that job in Maricopa County, does he not?
Absolutely. He has the biggest job. I mean, he has the most authority, of anybody in that county. Including the feds, he has the power to kick the feds out of the county. However, as you know, Don, that across the board, what happens with the federal government is that, they always backdoor their way, they intrude in, and they basically give something to get something back, and they're offering, beware of those bearing gifts, if you will. They come in and they offer the police departments, a few Hummers and some automatic weapons and so forth. But, in turn, then the respective police departments have to give up the authority for the feds to move in and do whatever they want to do in our venue, in our territory. So, they ultimately have been, most of them have been sold out. There's a few rampant, or a few places in the country, a few counties that the sheriff still knows what his job is and what his authority is, but most of them have been compromised.
Yeah. Well, I find it rather ironic because there's, as you well know, there's a lot of real estate corruption in Maricopa County, and it's tied to some major counties in a couple of other states. And you and I and many of my other guests have talked about that issue, the money laundering that goes through the recorder's office and the transfer of properties and the identity theft and theft of public funds is converted into real estate, and it's nothing but an organized crime ring. I'd like to see him tackle that too.
It's a bigger picture here, Don, because you were talking, we can go into all kinds of different directions, but you were talking, about since the Revolutionary War, the secret societies and so forth. We're talking about Masonic. We're talking about the back slapping good old boys with a wink and a nod, the under the table, the corruption that goes on. You're talking about the corruption that's going on through the county recorder's office and the real estate, it permeates like an octopus's tentacles throughout every facet of society in government, inclusive but not limited to, for example, the court system. You know that you followed some cases in the court system. Now, I'm a professional in, educating people on avoiding probate, whether it be death probate or living probate. Well, the corruption in the probate courts are absolutely unconscionable But the public at large, the vast majority, knows nothing about this. And, you know, just by virtue of just a person having a will, they go into an attorney's office and say, well, you know, I want to pass my estate on to my heirs. Okay, well, you need a will. Well, the attorney will not tell them that a will does not avoid probate, and the attorney, you know, will tell the respective client that everything is fine up until the time this guy dies. Well, then his family finds out everything isn't fine because there's a bunch of corrupt fingers in the pie, from the attorneys to the appraisers to the, you know, the administrators, the court costs, and so forth. And it's rampant not only in death probate but also in living probate when somebody becomes incapacitated or is declared incapacitated by a court. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Don, that you've had occasion to investigate a case or two similar to that or in some form of court corruption. Have you not?
Oh, tons of them. And you know, a lot of this is going on in Cook County, Illinois, which is tied into Maricopa County, Arizona, which is tied into Salt Lake City, Utah. And in my recent research, I made a very, very strong connection. And when I say strong, there's no doubt. It's the same kind of connection to Denison, Texas, and this ring of spies that I was talking about that came in to the country long ago, but really ramped up their activities beginning in 1942. And for 30 years, basically one individual ran that whole operation. And, you know, it brings in a lot of famous names. You have to read my research. We could spend the rest of the show just talking about that. But yes, to answer your question, it's going on in real time. The people in Cook County who have investigated how their properties were stolen from them, you know, they were criminally impoverished by the courts there, through basically Child Protective Services. Patrick Fitzgerald, the special prosecutor, whose name I'm sure you're familiar with and many of our listeners, was warned, go after anybody but leave CPS alone or you'll get a bullet between the eyes. That's basically why CPS is what it is all around the country. And it's destroying American families. They care not because they're stealing their houses. These parents are fighting to the last penny they have to get custody of their kids. Or in cases of divorce, divorces that are, let's say, the divorce decrees that are being enforced upon a complaint of by one or the other spouse, that the divorce decree has not been honored, they go after the person with the most money and give, in many instances, they give the custody of the children either to the abusive spouse. In most cases, it's the man, and then go after the house that the woman got in the divorce proceedings, leaving them penniless and without a home. This happened with Dr. Sheila Mannix, to the tune of $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And
go ahead.
When I was going to say, and also they institutionalize these kids, and/or they put them in foster homes where they're further abused. This is going on all over the country. And while this is going on, these guys are playing Monopoly with these properties, packaging them up in MERS accounts, mortgage pass-throughs that create securities where they do not legally hold the titles to these properties. And this is going on internationally, which is why the stock market is in total chaos, because it's corrupt from the top to the bottom.
Right, I'm following you correctly. They actually mask these properties with corporations or third-party fictitious names or whatever. But it's interesting. Just a couple minutes ago, you were bringing up the money, you know, in the family courts and sucking the parents dry. And the same thing is happening in the probate court with living probate. And it's interesting that the more money that a family particular happens to have, and you know, my expertise is on the probate court. So you're more into the family court system, not as an expert, but you have followed those. I've found in my research and also in my profession that the more money that one would have, and it's interesting that they prey on these people, that you know, did you know that the majority of the probate courts in the United States consider old, you know what the age they consider to be old age, Don? The number,
well,
the age that they consider old age is 62 or above.
I would have guessed 55, but yeah.
Well,
okay, 62.
It's 62, but what's interesting is they'll use that factor that a person is too old to handle his or her own affairs, and they will go into a capacity hearing, you know, have a court hearing on it, and appoint a guardian conservator for them. And in a lot of states, a conservator, in order to be a fiduciary, do you know that the only qualification that you have is to go in and declare yourself one? There is no license, there is no permit, there is no nothing. Just hang a sign on your door. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and that can be done behind a person's back? Say a child that has, one of the children of a parent who is being scammed by that person. In other words, they could go in and declare that they have power of attorney, for example, and on that basis, they want to take over the assets because the parent is incompetent. Whether that's true or not, it seems to be something that's happening. I've come across that a number of times.
Well, yes, it is happening, and it's rampant across the United States, and it seems that the larger the estate, you know, the more apt that the person is to be targeted or declared incompetent. And what's interesting is that anybody, and for your listening audience, I want to make them very aware of this. Anybody, if you're over the age of 62 and you happen to be out mowing your yard and you're not getting all the grass as you're going back and forth and your neighbor happens to see you and says, oh my God, Harvey, there's something wrong with Harvey. He's not getting all the grass. There must be something wrong. And the neighbor could actually go, anybody can do this, Don, and the neighbor could actually go down and petition the probate court for a guardianship on Harvey simply because he deems he's too old to handle his affairs, one of which would be mowing the lawn. I mean, this is how ridiculous this gets. Okay, and it could be the neighbor. It could be a fiduciary. It could be his banker because he's not filling out his check properly. It could be anybody. And once that happens, the proceedings that go on in the court system, if they declare an incapacity based upon a judge, you know, ruling, then all of the court costs, the attorney fees on both sides, the person that is defending themselves and the person that is trying to get the conservatorship or guardianship, all of those fees are paid out of the ward or the victim, if you will, his estate. These laws have to be addressed. They have to be looked at because this is nothing but a pool, a den of vipers that are preying on and raping the American public, whether it be family court or probate court.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned some of these financial vehicles. The judges and the attorneys pool their money into Fidelity accounts. Yeah, you know, who handles Fidelity? Well, they look around any major city. There are Fidelity buildings throughout the same town. Not just one. There are multiplicity of these outfits, and there's one in every major suburb of every major city. Whether it's in Ohio or New York or Pennsylvania or Illinois, even down there in Arizona, I'm sure. You've driven past some of those buildings, and what they're primarily selling are securities on property that on which they have no right to claim they own the collateral. In other words, they're just creating the paper fiction and betting it in the stock market as if
well,
they actually
done what you're just what you're describing sounds like Wall Street.
it kind of sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's some definite comparisons there. So anyway, and what's interesting is this has been going on in this country for hundreds of years, and is only now beginning to surface to a small degree, because the legal community, again, we have these, you know, these back-slapping, wink and a nod, good old boys that are all in this club, and the club is called the Bar Association, okay? And you have these people that all know what's going on, yet the public at large, if they pose a question to an attorney, the attorney always tries to downplay it and say, oh, don't worry about it, it's no big deal, and they'll always, you know, massage their client to tell them, don't worry about it, we'll take care of it, it's no big deal. And the client always winds up getting just soaked and bilked out of multitudes of money, regardless of in what circle of the court system they happen to be fighting. It doesn't matter whether it's probate, doesn't matter whether it's family court, it doesn't matter whether it's criminal. I mean, take a criminal case, for example. Let's talk about that for a moment. Let's talk about what happens. I mean, the revenue that is being, pulled in by these respective states because of their budget deficits. And I'm going to give you a prime example, Don. Part of the reason that I am in Texas right now is my company that I work with has, you know, given me a test market here. But there's a number of reasons why I've decided that I may just want to relocate. One of those is that the budget deficit in Arizona is so bad right now that in the state or in the city of Phoenix, they have actually for the first time declared a 2% tax on food, which means that when you go down and buy $100 worth of groceries, you have to pay $2 worth of tax just to eat, Don. Now, that's a violation of the Constitution because the First Amendment says right to life. Now, life, you can't live unless you eat food, my friend, okay? That's a direct violation of the First Amendment of the Constitution, yet the city of Phoenix has instituted, imposed that tax, and they're charging you $2 per hundred just to eat. That is atrocious, do you not think?
Yeah, I mean, when you're paying for your meal, aren't you renting the seat you're sitting in? you don't own it, you're just renting it, and you get a bill at the end. And if you ate the food or just sat there and talked, it really doesn't matter.
Well, the other point that I wanted to make about this is that, and I'm going to go back to the state of Arizona, because I'm noticing this. You know, you drive up and down Highway 17 in Arizona, or, you know, 51 or Highway 10. They're putting up these ominous cameras all over the freeways, everywhere out in Maricopa County. And what they do is that the speed limit is 65, and all of a sudden, if you're not paying attention, they drop the speed limit down to 55. And then shortly thereafter, they will have a yellow sign that says, photo enforcement zone, 300 feet. Well, if you're blinking and you didn't notice that they changed that speed limit, you're going to get nailed with a camera. And when that light goes off, I mean, it is a brilliant red light. If it's nighttime, it will light up the whole sky. Okay, this is a form of revenue that they are using to build the deficit in the budget. And also with the court system, we're talking about probate court, we're talking about the family court, but also in the criminal courts, okay, they have different, for example, a DUI, all right, you've got a basic DUI, which is, I think it's 0.08%. Then you have an extreme DUI, which is 1.5. Then you have an extreme DUI, which is 2.3. All of this is about revenue. And to add insult to injury into that, when, you know, if a person is convicted of this, get this, if they go to jail and they want to get out on a work furlough, they have to pay $100 a day, Don, to the state for them to be housed in jail, for crying out loud. I mean, this is just, I mean, the laws that are being passed and a lot of the civil traffic infractions are being secretly converted into criminal activity to where now you're driving down the road, and let's say that you, I'm going to give you an example of what happened to me a couple of years ago. You know, I had two of the same kind of cars, two white Lexuses, and I had two different plates, and I happened to put the wrong plate on the wrong car, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm driving down the road, and all of the police now are, they are checking your license plates as you drive down the road, okay? And they've got some way of determining whether you got the right plate on your, I don't know how they do it, okay, but they pulled me over, they gave me a ticket for the wrong plate on my car, which used to be, I believe it was a $55 fine. And when I asked the cop, I said, well, you know, how much is the fine? He says, well, you know, I could take you to jail. I said, what do you mean you could take me to jail? It's a traffic infraction. He says, no, they've changed the law now. This is a Class B misdemeanor. For the wrong plate on your car, which is what they call the fictitious registration. Now, when I went to court on that, Don, get this, all right, before I ever go up in front of the judge, what happens is this. They have a screen up there that tells you about your elusive or illusionary rights that you supposedly have, your constitutional rights that are all a facade. Mm-hmm. Then, before you see the judge, a little paralegal comes out from the prosecutor's office, and you go up and sit with him or her at a desk, and they tell you, well, look, here's the bad news. They can give you 4 months in jail, $750 fine, and 1 year's probation for this Class B misdemeanor. But tell you what we're going to do. We don't know for sure, but we're 90% sure if you just go ahead and agree to pay this $350 fine, when you go in front of the judge will agree with it, and the judge will probably dismiss it. Or you could get 4 months in jail. What do you want to do? Well, what are you going to do, Don? You're going to say, okay, I'll pay the $350. And you know what? We have got just this freight train of people coming through there on a regular basis to the tune of millions and millions and millions of dollars for this deficit, you know, to offset this deficit. We've got new courthouses being built out there to offset the deficit because this is nothing more than an income stream. Everything that people do, you cannot go through the day, Don, without committing at least a half a dozen crimes that you don't even know you're committing. Did you know that?
Yeah, exactly. So what you're saying, the bottom line is, if you're going to buy a Lexus, don't buy two and don't make them white.
Well, yeah, okay. You know, look, I don't claim to walk on water here, okay? You know, I slap a long plate on the wrong car. And yeah, I got popped for it. And according to them, it's a Class B misdemeanor, and it cost me $350. But I would rather pay the $350 than take a chance on the judge saying, okay, no, it's $750 and, you know, 4 months in jail. But that's what they do to everybody, you see. But let's go back for a minute. Let's take a DUI, all right? It's not just the fine that you have to pay. Now, I don't advocate driving down the road, you know, and being over the limit, you know, because it's dangerous. I've seen people get killed by doing that. However, on the flip side of the coin, you've got the fine that is entailed, but you've got the Bureau of Motor Vehicles that steps in now. It's not just the court system. You've got the double whammy. You got the Bureau of Motor Vehicles that steps in and suspends your driver's license. They make you go through an alcohol screening, and then they force you to buy this machine to put in your car that you have to blow in every time you start your car, okay? And you have to pay for this machine by the month, plus you have to take it in to have it, quote, recalibrated every 3 months, and you have to do that for a minimum of a year on a regular DUI, or if it's an extreme DUI, it's 2 years. So they are bilking you in on the court system. They're bilking you on the fine. They're bilking you if you have to do jail time. They're bilking you from the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, and they're bilking you from the cost of the machine. Five different ways, not to mention that your insurance is going to go through the roof.
Yeah.
This is the country in which we live. Okay. What they have done, in my estimation, is they've figured out every possible way that they can take a human being, turn them upside down, and shake him until every dime falls out of his pocket. Then they can toss him to the curb. That's what they're doing. This is America these days, Don. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah, and they in some states, they also require what they call a remedial driver's course, where you have to go to a hotel and pay for hotel expenses and meals, and then sit in classes and take tests and watch films and all of this stuff and be browbeaten over a weekend, or some people have to do it several weekends on a consecutive basis. So they have that. There's six ways that they can get you.
Well, but we haven't talked about the seventh. We haven't talked about the seventh way, Don. Okay, and the seventh way is, if you feel like that you have been taken advantage of by the police department, in that the police report is written up in such a way that you didn't do half of what the police, you know, proclaim that you did, you go and you try to hire one of the good old boys that happens to be a member of that club called the bar to protect you. And the boy at the bar says, you know, the attorney says, okay, well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to do an investigation on this, and we're going to find out what's going on here. And I guarantee you, you're not going to do the time that they said you're going to do. They don't guarantee what you're going to do, and they don't tell you what the laws are about what you're going to do. They just say they're going to drop it down, or they're going to get you off. And what happens is whatever they do that isn't what you thought was going to be done, in other words, if you thought you were going to get 45 days and they drop it down to 30, after you've paid them $10,000 to $12,000, they consider that a victory. They pat you on the back and say, well, you won. Even though you're still going to jail for 30 days and you're paying for it, you won. So you, there's seven different ways on a criminal DUI conviction. Now let's think about what that is for a minute. Let's say that you, how much do you weigh, Don?
Oh, I weigh about 180.
Okay, you weigh 180 pounds. So that would probably be about, I'm going to guesstimate four beers is going to put you over the limit, okay?
But I drink, so.
Well, if all right, assuming that you did, four beers is going to put you over the limit, and you're going to wind up in the pokey overnight and go through, you know, get, you know, and get the humiliation. Oh, and by the way, I forgot to mention one thing. And not only is this in Arizona, but I walked into a wagon bag here in Round Rock, and they've got a different paper. What they do now to add insult to injuries, not only do you have a website of everybody that got arrested for a DUI, but somebody is capitalized on this in North Carolina, and they are putting out newspapers now in Round Rock here. It is a newspaper called Busted. What they do is they go down to the courthouse, and they get all of the mugshots of everybody that was arrested, and this is in Arizona and also in Texas here, okay? And you know what you look like in a mugshot. You know, they take the worst picture they can possibly take, and then they write you up about what you were busted for and how much the fine was and all that stuff. They put it in a newspaper weekly, and they charge the public, being as nosy as they are, $1 to $3 for this newspaper, and the people buy it. You know, so people are making money off of it left and right, and if you get arrested for anything, Your mugshot is going to be in this newspaper that all of your friends and neighbors, if they pick up a copy, they're going to hang a copy on their wall, and everything's going to be public record to humiliate you. This is the country and where we live.
Now, do you see the pictures of any illegal aliens on that in that newspaper?
Well, now, no, I don't, because they're, first of all, they wouldn't depict that they were illegal, but I would say that if they were illegal, they're not going to be there at all. If they're in Maricopa County, they're going to be in Joe Arpaio's jail. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying it is or it isn't. I'm just saying that they don't depict whether they are legal or illegal.
Yeah.
It could very well be, but, you know, I really don't know.
So these are just the regular people that live in Phoenix or in that area.
This is anybody who is unfortunate enough to get arrested for any infraction. Now, I used a DUI, but it could be anything. It doesn't make any difference. Okay, if you are arrested for what they consider to be a crime of any kind, you're going in that newspaper, and you're going on a website, and, you know, friends, neighbors, relatives, insurance companies, banks, you know, who you do business with. Okay, it's a humiliation. It's an embarrassment. I mean, let's face it. You know, I don't know about you, Don, but when I was 22 years old, and I'm 60 now, by the way, so that was 38 years ago, I got arrested for a DUI. Okay? And nobody knew about it. The police department knew about it. A couple friends of mine, that was it. Now, if you get arrested for a DUI or you get arrested for any of their crimes, you're going in a newspaper. Everybody will know about it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one of those things that just for however long down the road demeans a person's character. And none of us, let's face it, none of us are lily white. Everybody has fallen from grace at one time or another and something that they shouldn't have done and has been caught in what you would call, an embarrassing moment. Would you not agree?
Sure. And if we can shift gears for a moment, I want to follow that cue that you just left me with. And segue, let's make a comparison as to what's going on in the real world, if you want to call it the real world.
The real world. Okay, go ahead.
I don't know if you've heard of the CMKX. Actually, it has two names. CMKM/CMKX diamond mine in Saskatchewan, Canada. Now, there are a multiplicity of investors into this project. Some people own anywhere from, I think, 200 million to 700 million shares of this stock. And it's been found out that certain agents we could say securities brokers, sold 2.2 trillion phantom shares of this stock. And when this was found out, there was a lawsuit in the amount of $3.87 trillion filed against the SEC. Now, you're talking about people getting stopped for problems with their plates, maybe, you know, honest mistakes in your situation, or, you know, maybe going a couple of miles over the speed limit, which is speeding, okay, and maybe, you know, but they're paying a lot of money. And here you've got this massive fraud being committed, and nobody's arrested. The media's not reporting it. There are no mug shots on TV about this. And there's a class action suit, which was filed by an attorney, Al Hodges, out of Pasadena, California, who's representing the class involved in this corporation. Imagine that. Now, there are a number of things that have to happen. The government may be trying to quietly make a settlement with these people, but where is the honor and the integrity, first of all, in the SEC and in Wall Street, where this occurred? 2.2 trillion shares we're talking about here. I don't even know what the amount of money is, although they've calculated it's at least $3.87 trillion. And, you know, there will be.
Well, did you ask me where the integrity was with the SEC? Is that what you just asked me?
Well, yeah, I'm
well,
I'm
but wait a minute. Was not the Goldman Sachs, the investment firm that was declared a bank so the feds could, continue to shuffle funds into this, you know, monster, were they not just questioned by the SEC? And the SEC, and this is just the other day, okay, and they're softballing these questions at them, and the questions that are being thrown by the SEC at Goldman Sachs, these are the people that are supposed to regulate the banking industry. They don't even have a clue how the banking industry or the investment firms work, and these are the people that are supposed to be regulating them? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about the real world as opposed to the illusionary world? Which one's real and which one's illusion, Don? I mean, you know, I am so appalled. I'm just mesmerized at looking at this stuff. And these people are supposed to be, you know, supposed to be the experts, the professionals, you know, the overseers. These people are total fools, you know? And the public at large, they are, and it's not their fault because people are not unintelligent, they're just uninformed. They don't have a clue what's going on, you know? So, and this stuff is being run roughshod over the American public, and you're talking about the diamond mines and the class action lawsuits and the people that are being built out of how many trillions of dollars? Right?
Yeah, $3.87 trillion just in the lawsuit, and there's triple damages that would occur after that.
Right.
And you know, there was a recent attempt by three presidents, two past and one current, to steal $1.3 trillion out of the international settlement funds, which are to kickstart the economy.
Now, wait a minute.
They tried stealing $6.2 trillion from Michael C. Cantrell's Pennsylvania Investments Company. That was money loaned to him. They did it by altering his corporate papers, putting a mob figure's name on his corporation papers, claiming to be the secretary, and they tried doing this through the Bank of England. I mean, you're talking about crime that has never, ever existed on the face of the earth. And what's happening to these people? Nothing. So,
well, now, you're talking about the current and past presidents. Are you including or talking about the bailout and the stimulus package here? Is that part of it or not?
Well, that's actually part of it, too. I mean, that's another dimension altogether. You see, that money was given to foreign banks. There wasn't any bailout money given to people around here.
I know that. I mean, I remember, Henry Paul, this is for the good of the American people, blah, blah, blah. When before Bush walked out of office and it was, $787 billion, whatever it was, they just said, pick a figure that's really big. that's what they do. And then as soon as the gavel went down, they said, okay, we're going to do it. And the legislation was passed. It was shot through before Congress ever even read it. Henry Paulson turns around and says, well, we're not going to do with it what we said we're going to do. And everything was fine, and nobody did anything about it, And so, what's even more interesting, and people say, well, it was the Democrats or it was Republicans. No, it wasn't. It's all of them, okay? Because look at what we've got. We've got the Bush administration that walked out. We've got the Obama administration that comes in. And who does Obama appoint as all of his advisors? Who does he appoint, as the Secretary of the Treasury? Timothy Geithner, Goldman Sachs, these same criminals,
And
Larry
Summers.
Trilateral
commission, too.
What's
he's
that?
Not just Goldman Sachs, he's Trilateral Commission.
Yeah, well, they all are. The Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, all of these people are globalists, right? They're all one world government, new world order globalists, And so Barack, and people say, but Barack Obama, he's going to say, well, you already know, you went down the rabbit hole on Obama. We know who he is. Well, we know who he isn't. We're not real sure who he is, but we certainly know who he isn't. What's that code name you've got for this guy?
The short-legged Mac Daddy.
Because what, he wears 3-inch heels? Is that what you said?
Well, yeah, I've seen him in flats, and he's not all that tall. So he's now officially the short-legged Mac Daddy.
Okay, so, and I just saw a video clip, I think it was last week or week before. Now, I know you've gone down, you've done the research about where he was born. But his own wife came out just, well, that was a couple of weeks ago. And I don't know whether she slipped or whether it was deliberate, but she said he was born in Kenya.
Well, yeah, but you see, what, you believe that?
No, I didn't say I believed it. I said she said it. I didn't say I believed it. I don't believe anything any of these people say, okay?
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Yeah. Well, Congress had to pass a special resolution to officially declare that he was from Hawaii. And if you read the Sovereign Kingdom of Hawaii, you get a totally different perspective on whether or not Hawaii is our 50th state. That's an eye-opener. And you can just Google that. It's a free PDF online. Chock full of documents. And I've talked to some people from Hawaii who say that we have the same problem in Ohio, too. They're telling us that Ohio became a state in the early 1800s, and we're finding out that I think it was Eisenhower made an executive order, passed an executive order declaring Ohio a state. That's a state issue to be voted on.
Eisenhower declared it, and this is the same guy that you went down the rabbit hole on, and we found out he wasn't even legitimate.
That's right.
So what it boils down to, Don, is I go back to when I was growing up in the 50s and I was reading the Superman comics. We're living in bizarro world, is what it is, you see. everything that happens from all of our presidents all the way back, we go to school all the way through elementary, junior high school, high school, none of the history books are anything close to what the truth is, all right? It's all written by what they want you to believe, and then they jam it down our throats all throughout our lives, and they put us in, and I believe you mentioned this on my show, because you sub-hosted for me last week, the Matrix. If you will, we're in this matrix. We're locked in a box. We're taught that there's a left and right paradigm, and you're either a Republican or a Democrat, which, as far as I'm concerned, is two boots of the same monster. you know, left leg and right leg of the same monster. But the public at large doesn't have a clue. And what it is they're so propagandized and locked in that box, they cannot see the forest for the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this stuff going on around, and I have to commend you, Don, you've done a fantastic job. I've read a lot of your work, you know, on the Three Stooges Go to Washington with Barack Obama, with Eisenhower. And, you know, you do meticulous research, and it's been proven, it's been documented. There is no argument there. People, you know, they can't debate it. They can demean you, or they can point a finger and ostracize you, but they cannot debate it. You know, so because you have done a tremendous job of your research on there. But as you read through this, if a person takes the time, you start scratching your head and you're saying, what kind of an illusion is it in which I live? Because that's all this is. It's a grand illusion with the maze and you're the mouse.
Yes, exactly. I use that example on your show.
I know, I heard. That's why I used it.
Yeah, one of the callers. Well, you know, I agree with you on the issue, what you said about the history books. There's no doubt about that. And I would submit that maybe Dr. Seuss was more accurate than the history books.
Well, you know, I had the privilege of interviewing Russell Means, who's, you know, one of the head honchos of the Lakota Sioux Indian Nations. And his family goes all the way back to Custer's Last Stand, you know. And, you know, he's the one that opened my eyes to all of the history books that were written about George Armstrong Custer and, you know, how was Custer's Last Stand and the Indians, you know, they took him out, blah, blah, blah. Well, Russell Means told me the real reason why the Indians did that. Do you know that reason?
No, I don't.
Okay. The real reason is because Custer and his men were going through all of these Indian camps that were alongside of this river. And they were raping, they were stealing the buffalo, they were pillaging the Indians, and they were just small tribes, right? There may be 20 to 60 people in a tribe, and finally the Indians got together and they started going up and down the river to these different villages, and they banded together and they got all of the warriors together to the tune of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, and they told them what Custer was doing, okay? And so they all got together and they basically, they tricked Custer. Okay, I guess he was going, you know, robbing this place or pillaging and looting or whatever he was doing, and they nailed him. You don't hear anything about that in the history books. Now, I read Russell Means' autobiography, and he depicts in his autobiography what really happened. And he also says that the United States has entered into 150 treaties, I believe it's 150 or 172 treaties, something like that, with the Indian nations over the course of 180 years or whatever it was. The United States government has violated every one of those treaties. And so the Indian nations have a real bone to pick, if you will, with the American government, because they have been screwing those people over for 150 years, whatever.
Yeah, and you know, that took on another dimension with the casinos. And, you know, they violated the agreements there. In fact, they bribed some of the local tribal leaders to basically turn in the people that weren't following federal law, even though they had their own tribal laws. So, you know, they've gotten those people into the system, too.
Well, I would have to assume that has something to do with the revenue that is taken in by the casino and the fact that the federal government wants their fingers in the pie.
Now, yes,
that would be the logical assumption, right? I mean, let's face it, this federal government wants their fingers in everybody's financial pie, you know?
Yep, I would agree with you. Well, you know, so when we compare these two paradigms of you know, the rules that we have to play by and the no rules that they play by. Certainly this type of criminality and you know, there are literally, it's way beyond hundreds of trillion now, of dollars. It's more into the quadrillions of bogus, securities out there. Okay. This is phantom stuff that's been put out there, and they assign this debt to us. This is the one thing that people aren't aware of, and, you know, you and I have talked about this on some past shows. As far as, you know, all these debt to us
in 1933, Don, you know that.
Well, of course.
The Federal Reserve came into play in 1913, and from 1913 to 1933, in that 20-year period, once they invoked the Federal Reserve, this country, this nation went bankrupt. And, mm-hmm. and at that point in time, 1933, is when they basically pledged the hind end of every American citizen, even yet unborn, to, into slavery. Into usury on the fiat currency that we use. And the public at large doesn't know that. Very few people know that.
Yes. And then they stole all the gold in 1934, and it's become the favorite currency of the elite, gold and silver, and they don't use the bills. They don't honor the bills themselves. It doesn't mean anything. It's just a way to control us.
Well, you know, there's an interesting topic, and I know we're running short of time here, but and I thought this through. I'm thinking, you know, gold right now is $1,160 an ounce, I believe. But
mm-hmm.
do you really, it cost you and I $1,160 plus whatever the fee is to buy an ounce of gold. But do you
mm-hmm.
know what it costs the Federal Reserve to buy an ounce of gold?
It's something like very, very minute.
33 cents. It costs them 33 cents. You know why it cost them 33 cents? Because it cost 3 cents a piece to print a $100 bill, and they're the ones that print it. So they print 11 $100 bills plus a 50, call it 36 cents. It cost them 36 cents to buy an ounce of gold. And now, correct me if I'm wrong, Don, but there's something wrong with this equation. You know, it costs us $1,150, and we have to go out and work for the money. All right, all the United States government has to do is have a Congress declare a budget of, what is it? I think it's $2.3 trillion this year. The deficit is, I don't even know what it is. The Federal Reserve gives the federal government the money to put into circulation, which deflates our currency even further. The federal government does absolutely nothing for that currency, other than have Congress say, okay, that's what the budget is, we approve it, here's the Federal Reserve, the Federal Reserve prints the money, puts it in the economy, it inflates, it lowers the value of our dollar, yet we use these dollars to go out at inflated prices, buy an ounce of gold for $1,150, they can turn around and buy the same ounce of gold for 36 cents.
Yes, and while you describe what's going on with that, we're supposed to be on a gold standard, along with the rest of the world, since December of 2008. And here we are still using the fiat paper and usury credit. And all the while, these guys are trying to steal the International Freedom and Prosperity Funds. See?
Let me back up just a minute and forgive my naivety here. But you said since December of 2008, we're supposed to be on a gold standard?
Yes. The Basel III agreement took care of that. Everything is supposed to be above board, open books, one set of books, not two. And if money is held in offshore accounts, they have an obligation. Anyone withdrawing funds from an offshore account has to show source of funds. And they can't do that because they've hypothesized all of these derivatives and hedge funds and the various security games that they play to move this money from bank to bank around the world as if they own it, you see?
Tell me, is this the reason why when we see Ben Bernanke being questioned by Ron Paul or anybody in these congressional hearings, we see him do a song and dance and smile like a Cheshire cat?
Oh, yeah. He didn't know that this was coming, that this was happening. He engineered this. He and others, okay? But, you think it's coincidental that we've had how many, two or three consecutive chairmen of the Federal Reserve and or secretaries of the Treasury that came from Goldman Sachs? And they're looking at Goldman Sachs. I doubt that they're going to do anything to them because if they did, they would totally collapse. But you see, that's a corporation that's been built on illegal securitization of public and private property that doesn't belong to them. It's totally illegal. or unlawful, whatever word you want to use. That's the reality of it.
Okay, so in your estimation, Don, from you know, living in this real world in which you live, what percentage of the American people do you feel actually have a clue of what's going on here in the financial world, in the, with the Federal Reserve and so forth?
The number that comes up immediately is 1%.
Well, you know, what they've done is they've obfuscated it, they've convoluted it to a point where a Philadelphia lawyer and his team of backslabbing buddies couldn't figure it out. And so if that's the case, you know, the financial system of the United States is absolutely doomed. It's being propped up on air and bubbles right now. The entire financial system is literally an illusion. And from my estimation, we're looking at a grand market collapse within the next 2 years. You cannot spend your way out of debt, Don. Not with a fiat currency. Not in a debt currency society. You cannot do that. It's only a matter of time before that bubble bursts, just like the housing bubble burst. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. I would say it's already burst. They're just pretending like it hasn't.
Well, it's already burst, but I'm saying that there's a length of time now that they've... It's like the ship is sinking and the pumps are on. Okay, they've turned on the pumps now, and the pumps are pumping out the water, but the water's coming in faster than the pumps are pumping it out. So eventually the ship is going to sink because the pumps can't pump it out that fast.
But, so yeah, what they've done is... add the rats swimming away with their little noses sticking up in the air. Picture that, you know.
Well, and there's a lot of rats up there, too. You know, and that poses the next question is, you know, how many of them... You know, how many people, and I think I might have asked you this question before, how many people in the Congress and the Senate, all the way up to the appointees of the president and so forth, how many of these people actually know what's going on and are just, again, those back-slapping buddies with a wink and a nod, you know, pretending like everything's fine? Do you think they all know it?
Yeah, maybe with the exception of Barney Frank. I think he's too busy doing other things. But, of course.
Well, we don't want to go there.
No, we don't. We don't have the time to do that.
No, not on this show, we don't. I mean, we can take that one apart another time.
You know, if we regular people out there know that, that's going on, certainly they know it. Okay? They've all got stock managed by these same or in these same portfolios, you know. So,
yeah. But the problem is, Don, that they have insider trading knowledge. You know, I mean, it's the back slapping boys, the wink and the nod. Hey, don't tell anybody, but you need to sell this right away, okay? And the people that are playing ball are the people that get that inside information, and the people that don't are the people that get burned. You see, right? And this goes into the And I don't want to go here because we're running out of time, I know. But it goes into the whole Masonic syndrome, you know, the levels, degrees of masonry and how much you know and how high you have to get before the truth is exposed and, you know, the oaths that you take and the levels of secrecy and what you're exposed to after you get up to the certain levels when you know that you're a good old boy as opposed to questioning whether you're a good old boy and you know you're nefarious and deceitful and, you know, criminal enough to play with the big boys, right?
They have to know this is going on. You know, I mentioned Al Hodges, the attorney representing CMKX, and he reported within the last day, yesterday, he reported that 10 bankers and 18 Federal Reserve people were arrested and dealt with over some of this corruption that we're talking about. Now, this has been reported for a number of years by Christopher Story, International Currency Review. You know, they took him and me and several other journalists for an intel ride with the Wantagate story, but I've come to the conclusion that that was permitted to occur because it was an extension of what was called the Lend-Lease program from 1942, when we surreptitiously joined the UN. In fact, we were the first name on that agreement. January 1st of 1942. We financed the Soviet Union. So when they brought down the ruble in, what was it, 1980, well, in the 1980s, when Reagan was president,
right,
they began this thing. And they got the cooperation of certain people, like Gorbachev, for example, and Putin, and, you know, the people in the GRU and the KGB and in the Kremlin to orchestrate this thing, because their intention was to bring down the United States. And this was going to be a vehicle to permit them to build up their military and their exotic weapons and their underground bases and their pharmaceutical companies and the oil companies and steal money and convert it into gold, you see. Take all the money off the market, all the you know, money that had any substantial worth to it, take it off the market and bring this country to its knees. That's exactly why Wantagate occurred.
Well, now let me ask you this, and I don't know the answer to this question. Maybe you do. Was the ruble, was there an intrinsic value? Was it backed at any denomination by gold or silver?
Well, I would presume it was. It was worth $1.20, the claim was, and they were allegedly buying, this was the story Wanta told, that they were buying rubles for as low as 18 to 23 cents. And then selling them on the market. So they were leading people, probably representing that the ruble was going to take off, and buy him now because you can get in now, you know. And if it's true what Wanta said, then they made a ton, they made a killing just on selling the rubles that they converted from U.S. dollars. Now, he mentioned $150 billion is money that he had been given by Reagan as a treasury agent. Though he called himself an ambassador, he was just doing an underground sting on a bunch of countries and the financial markets internationally. So they knew pretty well what they were doing, and the Soviets went along with it because they expected a kickback on the back end of this. And they stole everything. This is what's created all this flack with the G7 and the G8 and the G12 and the G20 for the past 4 or 5 years. That's what's been going on. They all want their money, and it's been hijacked. Nobody can get the money. They can't steal it. They've been found out. The foreign accounts have been frozen. They come up with all kinds of schemes to try to shift it from one bank to another, changing the names on people's corporate documents, anything they can do. It's just outright theft and criminality. This is organized crime. RICO. It's not government. So,
no, I recall, I mean, you know, when I did the research, I did my own investigation on that back, a few years ago. And I remember uncovering documents with George H.W. Bush's name all over it. You know, money that had been, laundered and moved into, I think, in Panama, which is part of the reason that Noriega went down, because, you know, he wasn't playing ball with George H.W. Bush. And a couple of other countries that I don't even remember. But it brings up an interesting point. I was sitting here in my room the other night, and, you know, Oliver Stone came out with a movie, W. I think the name of the movie is W. George W. Bush. And mm-hmm. I'm not going to say it was all factual, but what was interesting about that movie is that throughout the movie, you know, George H.W. Bush is depicted as basically a loser. He was a flake, and he bungled everything that he did, every business that he was set up in. Remember, he's a good old boy, Skull and Bones 322, you know. George H.W. Bush was always setting him up and trying to get him on the straight and narrow, you know, wound up getting him in these situations with Arbusto Oil, which, by the way, the Bin Laden's finance for him, the Texas Rangers that he owned. All of this stuff was set up. He had a silver spoon in his mouth, you know, the whole time. You know, the George H.W. Bush, the Bush family, the money that was involved in Wantagate, these guys were all complicit in having, well, they had the fingers in the pie of stealing it, you know. But as you've done your research going back, you know, to Eisenhower, we've done the research on Barack Obama, all of these guys, you did the research on George H.W. Bush, where he really came from. Okay, it seems that none of these people are who they say they are who they are, you know, professed to be, Don.
Same with McCain. And part three of the Three Stooges is on the way, the third stooge, by the way. So
there's another stooge.
Hillary Clinton, yeah. I did McCain.
Well, wait a minute. Yeah, okay, we got McCain, Clinton, and Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. No, excuse me, and yeah. McCain, Clinton, and Obama, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so McCain, you're writing more on McCain now.
No, McCain is parts one and two. Three through 7B is the short-legged Mac Daddy, and the third one is Clinton.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. You know, you get so extensive in these articles, and it's been a while since I've read them, so I get confused, you know. So you're always coming out with more stuff about these presidents, which really, with all due respect to you, nauseates me, because I'm finding out that none of these people are who they say they are. They were all put there. They were all maneuvered. They were all groomed. They were all, you know, with malice and aforethought, you know, years and years and years, actually generations in advance, you know, groomed to be put in this position. All the while, Don, the American public is thinking that they actually have a choice in voting these people in. But they never ask the question of how they got there to begin with. You know,
there's a very interesting coincidence with all of them, too. They're all tied into murders. Senior, no doubt, okay, whether you want to say Iraq or the two pilots that flew with him when he was in the Air Force,
oh,
when he ejected from his plane, 9/11, okay, McCain and his wet start. On a ship.
Well, let me ask you this question. Are you saying that they're all, and I know this because I've done some of the research, you know, George W. Bush tied in with the murder of JFK Jr., you know, are you saying
both Kennedys, both JFKs?
No, I know. I mean, George H.W. Bush, there's a photo of George H.W. Bush, and he claims he doesn't remember where he was in November 22nd, 1963, but he was in Dallas. Okay, because there's a photo of him in Dallas
in
1963. And there's a gentleman I interviewed, he wrote the book Dr. Mary's Monkey, that, you know, when they were working on this cancer virus, you know, for polio, that mm-hmm. Lee Harvey Oswald was working with Dr. Mary and another woman of whom he was having an affair with. During this time, and Lee Harvey Oswald was actually a CIA affiliate, you know. Lee Harvey Oswald did not shoot John F. Kennedy.
You know, one of the people who signed the papers to bring Lee Harvey Oswald over from Russia was Prescott Bush when he was a senator in Connecticut. You know, it's a deep story.
No, I didn't know. See, I mean, these topics, which is interesting, because, you know, you start going off on this stuff, and as far as the listening audience goes, yeah, I know we're jumping around here a little bit, and we're, you know, doing an overview of certain different things, but you can take any one of these topics, which you have done, and, you know, a great job of doing, put on the rabbit hole long, you could spend a week just talking about one of them, you know,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, a quick synopsis of this, an overview. You know, for the sake of the listening audience, and I know your listening audience is veterans. You've got new listeners coming on all the time, but the whole picture, if you take, you know, if you go back from the, you know, the trees and you look at the entire forest, is this country is nothing like what they have told us it was. It wasn't built the way they say it was. The history of this country is nothing like they say it was. What has happened behind the scenes has all been propagated, has all been premeditated in advance to happen. Nothing happens by accident. And I believe, who was it that said that? If it's political, nothing happens by accident. It's always premeditated. And there was somebody, I can't remember who it was that said that.
I think it was Professor Irwin Corey, who used to be on the Steve Allen Show. No,
come on, you're throwing me another curveball here. But you know what I mean. You know, nothing
yes.
is as it seems. And so a society at large, and this goes into the levels of consciousness that we've talked about before, Don, is that the people that are walking around, that are living in the right-left paradigm, that are believing what they see on mainstream news, if there's 10 levels of consciousness, Don, and I don't know, there could be 12 or whatever, on what level of consciousness are these people living? If they're believing in the right-left paradigm, watching, you know, Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, what level of consciousness are they on?
Point two.
Okay. Now
that's the number that jumped at me.
Now I'm going to tell you right now. I'll tell you what. Right now would be an underground bestseller. Okay. If you
What's
were
that?
To outline the levels of consciousness and the educate, it would be like consciousness one and two, consciousness three and four. You know, just like you go to school and you learn algebra one and two and so forth. All the way up to level 10, which is the highest level of consciousness, and you depict at what level, you know, each fact is manifested, brought forth, right? All the way from, you know, believing everything on mainstream news up to the cloning and reptilians, you know, up to beaming yourself off the planet, you know, and everything in between. Now, that would be an underground bestseller. Because it would go light years into awakening. And we've talked about this before. If you're on level of consciousness point two and somebody else is on a level one, you think that person is crazy. You know, there's a thin line between genius and insanity. But you think that person is crazy because all of the things that they are tossing out there, and I've been guilty of this and so are you, okay, they think that you're absolutely out of your mind. They'll throw you out of restaurants for talking about it, all right? But once their eyes are open and they graduate, they go up that rung of the ladder to that step one, and they see, now all of a sudden they can't believe that they didn't see it, and they look at the people that are still on that level point 02, and they're saying that, well, they're all crazy for not believing it. So at every level that you attain, the same thing happens. You look at the level above, you think they're crazy, mm-hmm. You look at the level below, and you think they're crazy because they can't see what you have been enlightened to. Right?
Yeah, that's sort
so
of
I think the
what
next
happened.
Project
yeah.
I think the next project that you should undertake, Don, is consciousness 1 through 10, okay? And then when you go to 11, you just have Scotty beam you up and it's all over. What do you think?
That 11 won't occur here on this planet. For anybody for that matter. Anyone that ever came with that level of consciousness was murdered. Just to stop what's occurring today, to stop people from waking up and realizing who we really are. You've heard me say this before. You know, we were created by the Creator, and that's not the person. That is not the God that these beings worship. They worship another God. And in a sense, he is the God of this realm, but he's not the ultimate God. And this planet has to exist with other planets. It's got to exist within the universe. You see, the universe itself is not a matrix. This locale that we call planet Earth has been constructed to be a matrix, but that's changing. In one sense, it's already changed. It's just that everyone's not realized that yet.
So, in essence, what you're saying is that planet Earth is really, more or less, to quote Alex Jones, a prison planet. A matrix or a prison.
Well, yeah. Who else would control a prison other than the warden, you know? And these elite are nothing more than the warden of a prison.
Well, but then it poses other questions, you know, like, is this our form of hell, number one. Number two, you're talking about levels of consciousness, and they kill everybody that comes to Earth with that level. What about Jesus Christ? At what level of consciousness was he? And because he was at that level, they ultimately killed him, correct?
Oh, certainly. He was a threat to you know, to their goals, even, you know, 2,000 years ago. And other saints that came here, other prophets that came here with similar messages throughout the history of this planet. This has been something that's happened over and over again. And they've, of course, you know, they've had to suppress that information. We couldn't dare learn the truth
well,
about ourselves.
Speaking of the information, Don, as long as we're tossing it out there, and I'm on one of the lower rungs of consciousness and you're higher, let me just toss a couple things out at you, okay? You know, when the story that we get, let's talk about Jesus for a minute. I mean, the story that we get, Jesus Christ was born in a manger and Mother Mary and blah, 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 blah. Do you think it's possible in all of the hieroglyphics and the things that are, you know, depicted on the ancient Egyptian tombs and so forth, that he indeed came in a flying saucer?
That's always a possibility. They had him before he was here, and they have him now, and he very likely could come on one. So, you know, I hope that answers your question. I wasn't here at that time and witnessed that event.
No, I realize that, but I, you know, I'm going back and looking at, you know, I'm even going back into the Bible and looking at some of the ancient relics, you know, the hieroglyphics, some of the writings on the wall, some of the skeletal remains that have been uncovered, and I can't even remember where it was, in Greece or Turkey or whatever.
Greece. Yeah, Greece.
The Anunnakis, that, you know, the 30, 40-foot giants that were here, that are, you know, they're depicted in the Bible. Now, as you know and I know, you know, man got a hold of the Bible. Anytime man gets a hold of it, he's going to corrupt it and do whatever he needs to do. And what was it, 325 A.D., it was Constantine that pulled the whole book of the Bible out regarding reincarnation because he wanted more control over his subjects. You know, there are several chapters or several books in the Bible that are no longer there because man has got his hands on it and converted it and corrupted it to a point where it would exhibit more control, which brings into, or, you know, brings into play organized religion as a whole.
Yeah.
You know? But as we go back through time and we look back through, you know, the Egyptians and Mesopotamia and the Maya, all of this, you know, we look at those hieroglyphics and we look at some of the depictions on the wall with the flying saucers and the strange looking beings that they had written on. Why would they do that? You know, did somebody just make that up? No, I don't think so. They've been here for thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of years.
Well, we're assuming that those hieroglyphic drawings were flying saucers. They may have been weather balloons, crash dummies, and swamp gas.
Well, according to our government, you know, if you listen to them, 1947, the crash of Roswell, Mexico, it was swamp gas and weather balloons. You know, but at the time, you know, did they have the mass mainstream propagandic media like they do today? I don't know. You know, there could have been another form of it. You know, maybe back in Atlantis. Who knows?
Well, in those days, the high priests, you know, and those characters controlled the information, you know, doing the bidding of the king. But they were always advisors to whoever, you know, the emperor.
Well,
or the
but the,
king,
but the bottom line is this, that all through, this is the point that I was going to make, all through this history, and the history being suppressed, and the people that have come to Earth that have, you know, had the higher level of consciousness that have been assassinated, there is a deep, dark force, you know, Masonic, secret societies, whatever, is controlling a source of information that they do not want the masses, the controlled populace, through organized religion or anything else, to get their hands on, to expand their level of consciousness, to find out what's really going on, whatever those goings-on may be. They are enlightened to a point with whatever they're enlightened with that they don't want us to know, because for us to know it is to elevate our consciousness to effect to be on their level. Do you think I'm on the right page here?
Oh, yeah. You know, they have a secret goal to live forever. And you know, it goes beyond the secret societies. It goes to the big secret, and that's who's pulling their strings. But that's a topic for another show, Michael.
Well,
ended on that note, but we're out of time, and it's certainly interesting. You see, we started with speeding tickets, and look at where we are now.
Well, Don, before you end, I certainly want to thank me for coming on. No, I'm just kidding. I want to thank you for allowing me to come on your show. It's always a pleasure to come on and compare notes with you. And it's what's interesting, as far as listening on, we never know what we're going to talk about. We never do any research. We never pick a topic. We just go for it. And it's always an interesting program because it's always spontaneous and it's off the top.
Yes. Well, I mentioned Dr. Seuss. He used to do illustrations for Standard Oil. Even he was involved in this international cabal. Poor guy. But he wrote some good books.
Well, I learned something new today. The information never ends, and you can read it till the day you die, and there's never any end to the fascination that I uncover by finding out what I didn't learn or what I was taught that was false in school.
Yes. Well, I want to thank you for coming on Evident Footprints, Michael. I'm sure the listeners enjoyed our conversation. And your view on what's going on in the not just the commodities markets or stock markets, but also in the area of homes and estate planning, which you are quite expert at. So I look forward to having you on the show again. Let's not wait so long. It's been quite a while since you've been on the show.
And, we'll do it again. It's always a pleasure, Don. Just let me know.
Okay, and I want to encourage people, you still have your website up, right?
I have it up. I mean, honestly, I haven't done anything with it in a long time. I've been so busy with my other job that I've let it go. So, if you get in there, theamericanawakening.org, you'll see a picture of me with some old articles. That's about it. I haven't been in there in months. I don't even advertise it much. But if people want to catch my show, it's on oraclebroadcasting.com, 4 to 6 p.m. Central Time, The American Awakening.
And that's on Saturdays?
That's on Saturdays, yes.
Okay, very good. Michael Herzog, thank you for being on the show. That wraps it up, folks. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. Also like
Thanks,
to thank
Tom.
Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com as well. On the sound tonight, Seth Hendrick, and I want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. And join me tomorrow night when our special guest will be scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, Mr. Jim Murray. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.